Hello and welcome to Real Professional, the podcast where real professionals have really professional conversations. I'm DreadXP Rock on Tour, Jans Holstrom, today joined by the lovely, talented Ted Hinchke. Say hi, Ted.
I'm so pretty.
You're so pretty. Also joined by Abby Smith, a.k.a. Scruncho.
Hello.
Say hi, Scruncho.
Not lovely and talented.
I wanted to subvert expectation. People thought I was going to jump right into Scruncho, but Ted needs the love.
Yeah, this is the Ryan Johnson version of the podcast where we're just subverting expectations all over the place today. I'm not going to be making any jokes. I'm just going to be being serious this whole time. There's going to be no production hiccups, even though I accidentally just pushed my mute button in the middle of a sentence. It's all going to be fine.
And our guest today is one of my favorite Twitter artists, which is quantifier, Twitter artist, Trevor Henderson, a.k.a. Slimy Swamp Ghost. Say hi, Trevor.
Hello, thank you for having me on. You're very kind.
So we have everyone's lovely today, and I think it's going to be a good time, so DJ, drop that sick beat. Theme plays. Okay, so who's ready for their gamer safety update?
I've been like, we didn't do the podcast for like 2 weeks, so now I'm really excited to know about what I need to be safe about in 2022. Hopefully this is a New Year's related. I hope you put a lot of effort into this one.
I've been immediately intrigued.
Oh yeah, so Trevor, every episode starts with the gamer safety update, where I talk about the things that affect all you gamers out there, injury-wise. I think my favorite one, before I get into the new one, is the fact that you can collapse your lung from sitting wrong.
Oh, no.
That haunts me in my dreams, literally. Whenever I sit here and I start to slouch, I remember that.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
That's why you were giving me shit about my posture. You don't want my lungs to explode.
Just immediately straightened up, like, immediately. Yeah.
That was one of my favorite conversations because Abby was trying to explain to a room full of fat guys how she was reaching up underneath her rib to try to pop her lung back out if that was to happen.
Oh,
I don't even know how I would do that.
That's bracing.
Yeah, I would need I'd need a team for that. But this week's gamer safety update is not related to New Year's. It is related to Christmas tangentially. Who got VR for Christmas?
I did.
VR games.
Ooh, nice. Not me. I wish.
Yeah, same. Yeah, I need to buy an Oculus one of these days. But yeah, Ted did. So whenever I was searching around, I was like, you know what? I need a VR safety update. Tilt brush is dangerous. Tilt brush is
leave it there. Move on to the next topic.
Yeah, just move on. Tilt brush is dangerous.
Do your See own ya. Research, sheeple.
The podcast now.
How is Tilt Brush going to kill me? I'm curious.
Tilt Brush 2022 facts.net.freedom. Do your own research. No, Tilt Brush. So artists, and this also ties into some Trevor stuff.
Ooh.
It is a VR app where you paint with your hands and things like that with the controllers for the VR headset like that you're using and things like that. I could get into what you can paint with in VR, but I don't want to get that far into it. But I was reading up because my research for the gamer safety update usually consists of Googling gamer injuries, LOL. But there is a problem with Tilt Brush specifically that I've seen this pop up a few times. People will be getting low on the ground, hands and knees, to like paint something low in their giant mural of Friday Night Funkin' or whatever. And they're running their heads into fireplaces, walls, couches. There's a spate of head injuries from people trying to crawl around on the floor and do VR. So I wanted to tell you all, if you're going to use VR, be careful if you're going to be crawling around on your floor.
How does that even happen? Because you're supposed to, like if you get out of your boundary that you draw, it will, like, change the scenery.
I actually know exactly how this happens. So I've seen this happen in person, where basically people draw the boundary right at the corner of the wall. Oh, true. Yeah, like they just draw it like way too close to the barrier. Like like a coffee table or something, they'll like do it by the legs of the coffee table rather than the corner.
That makes sense.
To, like, bang their shins over and over again. So if you're on the floor, I could see that happening for sure.
It's like overlaps they don't reckon with.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the gamer safety update for this week should actually be people. People are dangerous, not tilt brush. You know, if you're that incapable of drawing out a boundary where you're not going to whack your head, you know.
Yeah,
I could do that every week if I was just going to pick people as the gamer safety update. I'm like, gamer safety update, people. And then we just move on.
Yeah.
True.
Have you guys covered the one? This one haunts me all the time. The one where the pneumatic spring in your desk chair can just randomly fire up through your asshole and kill you.
Yes, we haven't discussed that, but I am familiar with that because I saw a video of a dude just like sitting on a stream and that pneumatic rod just punched him right in the asshole.
You're sitting on you're literally sitting right now on a like rocket powered knife that can fly up into your guts and kill you.
No, I'm not. Abby, where am I sitting?
On your couch.
There you go, you're fine.
I'm right.
There you go. Damn
right, because I want to protect, that's a little known Wu-Tang song, Protect Your Butthole.
Yeah, I think about that every day, every single day. And yet I sit here.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to not sit.
I love that, because Trevor's a horror artist, and now I'm thinking Stephen King sitting at his desk, and he's like, you know what's really scary? This thing could just go up in my asshole at any time. That's the real horror.
I mean, maybe you're into that, though.
Yeah, like, I mean, that is definitely a thing that somebody somewhere is into, for sure.
I'm also into dying violently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That same guy who wanted to find someone to cannibalize him on the internet. There's probably like a whole subset of guys who like sell me a desk chair that'll just like destroy my asshole forever and kill me.
Armin Muse, the cannibal. Yeah.
Yeah. That was something.
Cannibal.
So, welcome to our cannibal and butthole destruction podcast.
<That's> so professional.
Lung collapsing.
Yeah, I'm way more scared than when I wasn't on the podcast now.
imagine your lung collapses and you're like sitting in your chair trying to get that last like breathe and you're like, oh shit, I need to get to my phone to call a hospital. And as you're doing that, you like shift in such a way and a spring just shoots straight out of your asshole.
If they ever do another Final Destination, that has to be like one of the big set pieces, I think.
Cut it off will be like a toenail that you clipped on the floor.
Yeah, exactly. You'll step on an errant toenail and then fall backwards on the chair and it'll like rocket apart and cause your lung to collapse.
We're gonna see like a sketch on Trevor's Twitter of like a ghost of Vlad the Impaler that now is like kicks by like shoving random things like fatally up people's assholes. So every time there's a story, it's like, the Vlad ghost strikes again.
It'll be like a really eerie photo of a corridor, like to an old bathroom, and there'll just be like a desk chair at the end, highlighted by a spooky light.
Such a bad way to die. Like, not that there's like great ways to die, but like internal hemorrhaging due to chair spring sounds fucking awful.
To be fair, I think it's only like happened once or twice. I don't think it's like
it doesn't need to happen more than once.
No, that's true. Yeah, but literally anything can happen once, right? A plane could crash through your.
It doesn't even have to happen. I know, like
yeah.
Did they not test this?
More people have been killed by chair spring shooting up their asshole than real life vampires. I'll give you that.
That you know.
It's one of those things, and I like that. You know, it only has to happen once. That's amazingly true. Look at, you know, they check candy every year on Halloween for kids. That's happened documented like one time, and it was a dude poisoning his own kid's candy.
Yeah,
that was once. But,
yeah, one time, and now our entire like holiday Halloween is kind of built around you got to check the kids' candy. There's like Twitter jokes about it. There's memes. It's like found a Glock in my kid's Milky Way, and that was one time.
I love that the
example of the generational divide is that my mother, when I talk to her on Halloween, is still like, well, be careful. Like, you don't want your friends getting any of that poison candy. And like all of her mom friends are like, yeah, it's so dangerous. Like they're in their 60s. And I'm like, everyone my age, every single person I know between the ages of like 40 to zero knows that that's a hoax, right?
Have there been a lot of urban myths that were actually like invented and propagated by the one guy who actually did it besides that? Because like that father who literally put the razor blades in the candy for his kids to try and poison and kill them was the guy who started it. And now it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, well, he from what I understand, it was like a news hoax thing where it was like, check your kids. And then he did it. But as a cover to try to kill his own kid.
Oh, shit. Okay. That makes more sense.
He actually did put razor blades in some of the candy he handed out, but only because he wanted it to be like, oh, this happened in our neighborhood, so it wasn't me, even though like it was all in like the same brand of Snickers bar, and he was the only one handing those. He didn't do a lot of research.
Terrible job. Yeah.
If you're going to kill kids, you either got to do it like Anakin and have like be the chosen one, or be a lot more clever about it.
Yeah, he's not. No. Also, just as a side note, I looked it up, and the chances of your office chair exploding are 1 in a trillion. So you're probably good.
That's one too many for that kind of statistic, though.
Yeah,
that's that song happened. Plays in a what's that? Miss Congeniality, the movie Miss Congeniality, starring isn't Julia Roberts in Miss Congeniality? Abby, you should
believe so. Yeah.
Why would I know that?
I don't know. It's a movie that's fun and comical, and I thought you liked those. I thought you liked lighthearted comedies.
No, I actually don't like any comedy movies.
You don't watch movies. That's based. I made an Abby normal joke because of Abby acting abnormal, and she didn't get it.
That's
talking about. Yes, I did. He likes.
You
to
did
make
not get the
up.
Joke. You've never seen Young Frankenstein.
Yeah,
Young Frankenstein's fine. It's all right.
Ooh,
that's a spicy take. That's gonna get you canceled.
Yeah, that's you. Ted's rolling up his sleeve. Doesn't even have on right now.
I don't like any.
I don't disagree. I think it's a great movie, but I don't particularly care if people like the same movie.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of any of those Gene Wilder like comedy parodies. I like Young Frankenstein maybe the best of them though. I really don't like Spaceballs like at all.
I agree with that actually. I thought Spaceballs was dumb. And,
yeah, it is.
Yeah,
like in a bad way dumb.
I think that Young Frankenstein is significantly more clever, but it's also pretty dumb. Like, there's a lot of dumb in that movie, but it's like, you know, sometimes you turn off your brain. None of it's as clever as Blazing Saddles, but, you know.
I still haven't seen Blazing Saddles. I'm not a big Western guy, so the draw's never really been there to see, like, a parody of that. But I've heard it's great, so maybe
it's
that'll change.
Movie. It is a bit
change my tune.
It's a bit shocking to watch in a modern context.
I've heard, yeah. They don't shy away from a lot of stuff that might be problematic for some people these days. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually am kind of curious. I should ask like kind of one of my first interview questions based on what we were talking about before. You know, yeah. I find that with creators, like there tends to be a lot of like appreciation without having to feel the need to like everything. Like, do you feel that like your perspective on other people's work and the weight that your criticism bears has changed over the years as you become more popular?
I maybe a bit, and I kind of wish it wouldn't because I'm just a one person. I feel like maybe there's more weight put behind like movie recommendations and stuff like that. Which, you know, I love recommending movies on social media and like horror books and stuff like that. And if I can direct more people towards that kind of stuff, that's great. But in terms of like other artists' work, I generally just try and share the stuff I really like, and if I don't like it, there's no point in, because I don't want to, you know, spread negativity. I just want to use my platform to point to the stuff I really do like and try and highlight artists that are much, much better than me and, you know, use the platform in that way, I guess, is the best thing to do.
I guess that's a good distinction, too, is that, you know, I don't want to spread negativity being, like, different than... I don't feel negatively about things, you know, like,
yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, like, you know, you do feel that, like, you know, I have this platform that has tons of eyes on it, both Instagram and Twitter. I wouldn't want to use that to like dump on people or even point to stuff I don't care for. I just want to use it as a way to get, you know, this amount of people that like this kind of stuff through my work, just like looking at people that, I feel are much, much better than me in many, many different ways and somehow don't have
Was there some point where you realized that you had the power to promote or sway opinions in both a positive and negative way?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, there was a point where, like, I started doing the photo bash creepy photos, and they started really blowing up and getting more popular a couple of years back. And then I could, it was kind of like, oh, wow, I'm actually, this is really getting a crowd going. But I think April 2020 was when Siren Head really blew up. And then, like, that was a little staggering in terms of how many people were there. And then I was like, then I was at that point, like, this might be something I have to be a little more careful with, I guess.
You had to go unfollow all the porn accounts you were currently following.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. yeah. Just, you know, just do a quick scour of any filth from my timeline. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really interesting because, like, you know, I've definitely, from a lot of the artists that I've talked to, not just artists, but like game develop. I mean, I am going to use artists in a general term. A lot of the creators that I've talked to have that moment where they like realize that they have a following that's not just passively looking at them, but listening to them. And that they like, they realize that like, oh shit, like, you know, there's like two sides to it. One is, do I try to lead this following in a certain direction, or do I try to just respond to the masses? And they're both kind of failed endeavors in their own way. Like, just listening to the masses all the time will get you drawing the same character over and over and over again, or making the same game over and over again. It'll get you really locked into a niche that,
yeah,
you know, you might be able to expand past, etc. And then trying to lead your audience can get you to disconnect from that, can give you that kind of like petty tyrant syndrome. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I basically tried to make a concentrated effort not to do pretty much not do anything different from when I started my Twitter account in like 2009, which was just talk about movies I like and books I like that more people should look at and artists I like that more people should look at. And I feel like as soon as you even start thinking about like, how am I going to lead, you know, this following, or what can I use this following for, or anything like that, it starts to get weird. I kind of just try and pretend that I have a much smaller following than I do, and just keep doing what I was doing, which is just talking positively about stuff I like. Try not to draw a focus on stuff I don't like, because honestly, you know, anything negative, it's not going to do anything good. It's just going to do bad. And I, you know, when you have that many people, it also can be pretty much anything you post that's not just talking about things you love and are passionate about can be twisted from people that are kind of bad faith into, you know, making it look like you agree or disagree with things that are, you don't agree with. So I just try and keep it to like, this movie's cool, you should check it out. I wish this movie got released on Blu-ray. This book's awesome. Here's another spooky dude photo.
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about, your following growing, is really interesting, because I think that a lot of people, like, they look at that higher follower number as like always the goal, especially when you're small. You know,
yeah,
you're just starting and you're trying to make it as like a YouTuber or a Twitch streamer or an artist or a game dev, and you're like just crawling for every single.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But then
absolutely,
there's a point where you're like, you know, you still have to use it to market, but you have to not become what I like to call like someone that's terminally online. You know, sort
yeah,
of disconnected from reality and like the realities of their market and also the world that we live in, that they're just like kind of only on Twitter and that is their existence, you know?
Yeah, you want to avoid that as best as possible. And you know, I haven't been that successful. I'm definitely on Twitter more than I should be. But I really just try not to engage with really unhealthy ways of being online and just try and keep it about like the things that I like, really.
I can appreciate that, just trying to keep it 55th Street.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You need to be aware. Okay, Jans, you can send him the clip for that after, just so that people can understand what we're
yeah,
talking about.
Yeah, yeah, will do.
The listeners at home, there's a lovely individual called Crip Mac, who is a rising internet celebrity, who is one of the 55th Street Crips. I haven't actually done any research, so if he's like a fake Crip or something, I apologize. Please don't come after me. But he is a delightful man. His main message is to throw hands and never commit suicide. That is what he's
wow,
about.
That was my New Year's resolution this year.
Throw hands and don't commit suicide. Holy shit.
Jesus Christ.
You can do a Zoom interview with him for only like $500. So if you need any life advice, go ahead.
That'll be my nuclear
wealth that I want to get to. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, I want to own a boat, or I want to own my house. I want to be able to afford to like get Zoom interviews with minor internet celebrities and ask them strange questions. Like, that sounds fun.
Yeah. What's that site where you can just like pay like $10 and like some celebrity will give you a happy birthday message or something?
Yeah, there's what? Like you can
Cameo.
Cameo, that's it. Cameo, yeah. I should look there and see who is on there, because I haven't looked into it. But it seems horrible and kind of interesting.
The only person you need to know that's on Cameo is David Hayter, the voice of Solid Snake.
Oh, that's all you need. How much is he charging, though? It's got to be like a couple hundred at least.
Yeah,
at least
quite a lot, because people keep on paying him to do the, like the dummy thick ass cheek clap copy pasta.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
What a great way to spend our wealth.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of like it's kind of gone from conventions where you might see like the Autograph Alley. Those people are all on Cameo now. Like, if you want the lady from Sleepaway Camp, she's on Cameo.
Yep. He's pretty affordable. He's only $100, $120 for a personal.
Oh, damn.
Personal for business. For business, it's $667. But you know,
wow.
Yeah, very cool. You go, David Hayter.
Jans, I know you have a number of questions lined up about Siren Head.
I do. I do have a lot of Siren Head questions.
Hit me up
because okay. So we were talking. Well, we weren't talking about this. I was posting my itinerary in our little podcast chat.
Yeah,
and I was like, it's weird that Siren Head, because there's a Trevor Henderson wiki.
There sure is.
You made it.
I didn't know. Well, but yeah, I mean, I didn't actually make that. Wiki. No, it's all other people. But
No, I'm saying made it. Like you've reached that level of fame. I'm not accusing you of making your own Wikipedia. Okay. Your own wiki.
He's like getting all nervous.
Trevor,
I didn't. Not me. No.
This is the real focus of the podcast. Like, Trevor, I know you made your own fucking wiki. No. You blew up. It's a big deal. Siren Head is everywhere. And I remember one of my first, oddly enough, and this will lead into a question that Ted has later on. Excuse me. So one of my first interactions I ever had with you, and I don't even know if you remember this, because now, you know, I do the Dread XP Twitter and things like that. But back in the day before Ted brought me on, I ran Horror You Haven't Played, which is my own little thing.
Twitter.
And one of the first interactions I had with you, someone had sent me a game called like Siren Head something, something, something. And I was like, man, I don't want to accept this free game until I've asked the creator if he's like cool with that.
Yeah.
So I hit you up and you're like, that's not cool. And I was like, yeah, I was wondering about that. But ever since then, I've kind of followed Siren Head. It's spooky, yeah. But we were talking yesterday about how the Siren Head page on your wiki is longer than most like former presidents on actual Wikipedia.
Oh man, I haven't even looked actually.
Oh man, I took a screenshot of all the abilities, like, because there's an abilities section. Like,
I'm looking Siren it up Head's right abilities. Now.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
it's an amazing list. One of them is like photographic memory.
Yeah, I'd say that tracks. Okay, I could see that. Oh yeah, look at this. Haunting skills, camouflage, vocal mimicry, sound manipulation, high speed stealth, incorporeal, electrical and photographic memory. shape-shifting, not really. Surface scaling, perception manipulation. Okay, yeah, most of these track more or less, I'd say. That's actually, I was expecting a lot weirder. I was expecting like time travel or something.
Photographic memory is weird because who's ever asked? Like, who was like, hey, Siren Head, do you remember who won the 1986 Barcelona Grand Prix? And he's like, oh yeah, for sure.
I think photographic memory speaks to a level of cognizance I've been purposefully very ambiguous about. You know, I think Siren Head is more of a aping, like a mimicry kind of thing. I don't think you could ask him questions and he would know things to answer you. Like, it doesn't work that way, I don't think.
Yeah, I was sitting there in the Wikipedia editor, like, currently changing the picture as you talk.
Yeah.
I like, we just got you here so we could put the Trevor Henderson wiki on blast. We're
how
like, listen.
Is Siren Head's dick? That's what people really want to know. It's important.
He doesn't have a dick. Trevor? Doesn't have one. Doesn't, right, doesn't
what
have a
about
dick.
The foot fetish, yeah. though?
Does not also have a fetish. Doesn't? It's not a sexual being.
I'm sure people have drawn it sexually, though.
Like, oh, yeah, they have. Yeah. There's lots of that if you look for it, actually. Yeah, there's quite a bit of that.
So that's you're going to run into the funny side of the horny horror internet, because there's like a lot of people that are horny for monsters like Pyramid Head or,
yeah.
you know, Jason, Freddy, etc. You're going to get Siren Head porn for sure.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. This is. Oh, sorry. I just saw on the page here, it says Origin, Trevor Henderson's work precisely at the grave. What does that mean?
Were you at the
Are
grave?
Are you
while
an
doing
undead
it?
Individual?
It's yeah, it's on the Siren Head, it says his origin is Trevor Henderson's work precisely at the grave, like until I die? Like anyway, sorry.
You heard it here first, folks. Trevor Henderson is a lich.
Yeah, that's yeah. I'm
What is you know, is Shudder Authority you?
No. Shudder Authority is a guy on Instagram who makes like spooky videos, like CGI videos with monsters.
I just googled Siren Head and it came up with a bunch of that.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of those. Yeah, he's done a bunch of Siren Head ones. Yeah.
Whenever I was researching the last few days to get my itinerary together, I saw a picture of Siren Head raw dogging Pyramid Head.
Oh wow, I haven't seen that one. In particular, I've seen a lot of other ones, but not that one.
Who's the guy that made Nier? Fuck, I can't even remember his name. But he's always like
Yoko Taro.
Yeah. He's always like, yeah, send me your fucking weird porn art. Like,
yeah, why not? Right?
Gets away with it. I guess in Japan, their standards for public decency are slightly different. So, or I mean, like the expectations of what a person can put on their Twitter is slightly different.
They got like fake recordings of Siren Head on this page and everything. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of like audio recordings, like meticulously detailed. And that kind of dovetails, and I'll let Ted ask this question, but it is one that has come up a few times whenever we talk about things that people create and that blow up on the internet, like Slenderman.
Yeah.
Actually, I really kind of it's a more detailed question, so if we're done being silly, I can kind of get into some of the serious stuff.
Oh, well, I want to get all my silly out first, so let's continue talking about this Siren Head wiki page. No, I kind of dig it. Like, I like your art. It's...
Thank you.
It's like, it's creeping dread in the internet age.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell whenever you're looking at some Trevor Henderson art. There are many imitators. Like, well, let's not lie to ourselves and say that Twitter isn't full of people trying to do Trevor Henderson art. But it's kind of like, are you familiar with Briscoe Park? Does photography?
Yeah, I know Briscoe Park. Breezy, I think his Twitter person name is. Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, you can't confuse their photographs with anybody else's.
There's a bunch of imitators too of his stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's just something about the way that he does it that you can instantly tell, oh, that's totally Briscoe Park. That's one of his photos. And that's how it is with your stuff. It's like, oh, that's definitely Trevor Henderson. That's a Trevor Henderson. That's a fine vintage. That's a 2017 Trevor Henderson.
Thank you.
Cause you know, being a horror games company and everything, we, you know, engage with a lot of horror communities. And you see a lot of stuff like that, and you could just tell. I don't know what it is. There's something about your art that makes it stand out even from people trying their hardest to ape your art style.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really nice to hear. Because there are a lot of people, you know, I mean, I don't have a copyright on getting a photo of someone's darkened garage or whatever and drawing a dude in there. But it's nice to hear that, you know, there's something about the ones that I do that make it identifiable and stand out a little bit.
Yeah, I'm out here like a museum curator. I'm like, no, that's a fake Trevor Henderson. We don't need that here.
Yeah. You know, in 2018 when I was doing these, I was working in a bookstore retail, and I'd come home and didn't have the energy to do a full painting or anything, so I would just do like three or four different ones of those. So at a time I was doing like three a day for like a year and a half. So I think there's probably close to over 1,000 of them floating around by this point, probably more. A lot of them aren't good, mind you, but some of them are.
Not all of them are good.
That's like one of my favorite things on it's just because your art, and I hate to hurt my arm, like jerking you this hard, but like there's your art has become synonymous with the creepy part of the internet. Like, it's kind of that 2005 feel where there was video game creepypastas everywhere. And
yeah,
I've written extensively. I've spoken with folklorists, actually, about the internet urban legend phenomena. And a lot of stuff that comes up, and in my research, whenever I was doing that and talking with a folklorist and checking out YouTube videos, a lot of stuff is just Trevor Henderson art set to slowed down kids music.
That's there's so much of that, yeah. YouTube. There's a whole cottage industry of just my art over like AMVs or pop songs or weird music of some sort.
Yeah, like at this point, you should probably try to buy the rights for Tiptoe Through the Tulips because it's so often shown over your art on YouTube.
Yeah,
it's but I think prevalent. that's kind of Like, that's kind of a compliment towards you. That
no, totally, yeah.
Your art has become so synonymous with creepy internet things. Like, you go to cursed images on Reddit, and half of it's just Trevor Henderson stuff.
Yeah, no, it's wildly flattering. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What about, like, how many, I guess, if you've seen any at all, but what about, like, tattoo work? Like, have you seen any people use your art as I'm assuming you have at least once, but... Like, have you seen any crazy, like, full back siren head tattoos?
I have. I actually have. A guy in Russia sent me a bunch of videos on Instagram that were, like, a full sleeve on his right arm, like, from wrist to shoulder of, in black and white, of, like, every monster I'd ever, this giant collage, and me in the center of it, like, as a person, which was weird. So I'm on some guy's arm in Russia, like surrounded by like Siren Head and all these other, and a lot of them were like monsters I've drawn once in a photo and not like actually like full characters, just like, oh, that'd be a so weird guy. He's like a guy.
Hardcore devoted fan then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like if I draw a guy in one photo in like 2017 and then never address it again, it has a whole backstory somewhere and a name and abilities and encounters on the internet that I have no part of in any way, shape or form. They're literally like, there's, oh my God, one of the weirdest things I found, if you go on YouTube, there's like entire 15 to 20 minute long videos where some guy has gone through every monster I've ever drawn, like thousands of monsters, and decided what they sound like and recorded himself doing their voices. What Trevor Henderson monsters sound like part 84, and he's done every single one of them. It's really, really weird and flattering. Every part of this is like equal parts, like super flattering and just kind of unsettling a little bit, like that someone would be that, would spend that much time. It feels a little, it's a little bit scary, but also super flattering, but also scary, but also flattering.
You know, though, like what's really awesome about this, though, is that like all this stuff, I mean, you've had like so much content created based off of like the monsters that you've made.
Oh, yeah.
A lot about your character, because, you know, there are some artists out there that like would, you know, be obsessed with getting every little bit of profit. But you're just out here like, wow, they put in a lot of time. That's really cool. You know,
yeah.
It's always cool to see artists, like, especially with how saturated being an artist is during the internet age.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people want every little bit of credibility that they can get and recognition and stuff. So, like, it's cool that you're like, hey, man, it's cool. I'm on some guy's arm. Like, this guy's making 20-minute videos. Like, I think that's incredibly telling of, like, your good character.
I think, too, that, like, part of the whole thing about, like, a fandom evolving is that at a certain point you do kind of have to, like, accept that a certain degree of it will evolve without your say-so, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's something I had to reckon with especially like I mentioned, Siren Head blew up in April of, I think, 2020, when Markiplier played a game someone had made about Siren Head. And at the same time, this video of a giant Siren Head over a city that someone had made hit TikTok and became like super viral on TikTok, literally like the same day. So it became like this huge thing. I had to quickly discover that, you know, once something blows up on the internet like that, it kind of isn't yours anymore. It's the internet's, for better or worse. And the better part was that there was tons of fan art. Many artists who are much more talented than me doing, like, you know, videos and art. And this is true of, like, not just Siren Head, but other monsters and stuff I've done. But, like, you know, you get people doing, like, origin stories, like, full-on origin stories for your character and making up, like, whole plots for them, and stuff like that, that you maybe, you know, I personally like to leave ambiguous. Like, I don't think anything gets scarier or more interesting when you lay down, you know, it was made in the woods by a mad doctor who made a robot who looked like Siren Head. Like, you know, that's not conducive to the kind of stuff I'm trying to do, the work I'm going to do, kind of trying to do, sorry. But if you fight taking something, like, it never works out. So you have to just kind of accept and kind of let go of stuff in that way, and just kind of accept it's kind of the internet's now.
That actually perfectly dovetails into the serious question I had to talk about. So
yeah,
I guess I'll just get into it, which is, you know, copyright protection is something that people often don't understand. Like, what is a copyright? How does that all works? You know, how you maintain your copyright. Everyone on the internet seems to have their, like, amateur legal advice, which is not accurate.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with something what you're saying about, like, you know, you have to let the internet kind of do its thing. There is the real question, though, is that, you know, if you let the internet do its thing and you just kind of, you basically default to rescinding the copyright. Like, you basically default to, like, you know, public use of this product. It's kind of like what happened to Kleenex or something like that, which is you own the rights to that brand name. So
yeah,
that's the thing, though, is that, like, a lot of your work is on the internet, and it is, you know, you go on the wiki and it says, you know, Siren Head was created by this guy. But, you know, then there's these games that are coming out. Like, there was a Siren Head game that wasn't yours. You had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I imagine you would like to get paid for your work. I mean, that would be nice for you to be able to eat and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how have you, you know, gone about handling that, maintaining the copyright versus allowing the internet to kind of do its thing?
That's a really good question. And I guess the answer is that it's very tricky in that I fully recognize that Siren Head would not be as big as it is if that, you know, kind of fandom had been curtailed early and people had been kind of shut down and hadn't been allowed to grow in the way that it was. And I hadn't been quite as appreciative of the fan art and the fan writing and everything, which I am, you know. In the beginning, I was always just like, me. Try not to make money off of it, please. And, you know, otherwise kind of do what you want, because it's just fan art. And I understand that that's a whole thing. And, you know, you see some artists that are really just like, you know, if you make a fan art of it and you're selling it in your Etsy shop for $20 a pop, you better cut me in or whatever. And that's silly to me. That's just not worth it. And it's just, I would never do anything like that. But at the same time, yeah, like, I do want it to be recognized that it's my character and, you know, I did make it up and whatnot. And, you know, there's some stuff that's happened since that I can't talk about yet that is going towards making it recognized that that is my character. And there's bigger things on the horizon that I hope to announce fairly soon.
Well, that's very cryptic and very lovely. I always love getting those.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, but I can't talk about it. I mean, I do that all the fucking time.
I've wanted to talk. It's been kind of in the works for the last, like, 2 years, and I'm dying to talk about it, but I can't talk about it yet. So hopefully soon.
Well, I know that you, this is, like, the next topic. I know that Jan wanted to talk a little bit about Ghosts, which we just had Jed Shepard on last week. And I know that
designed
for that.
Yeah. Jed's, such a nice guy, such a cool guy. I was so happy to get, him reaching out to design that monster. I can now say that a monster I designed has been fabricated in puppet form by Jim Henson Studios, which is great. Like, the coolest shit in the entire world. I've only seen the ghost, the long lady, as it were, from Ghosts in like a few behind the scenes photos. I haven't seen the final puppet in action, but it looks really cool, I think.
Well, and I also, you know, going along those lines of working for, you know, making games for like, you know, working on bigger projects, etc. Imagine that you've been approached, and this is, you probably talk about this at least vaguely without revealing anything. You've probably been approached by people about making official Siren Head games and stuff, products, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's been definitely some talk about that kind of thing.
But I also imagine that, you know, and I'm speaking from the perspective of a producer and as someone who like runs in those circles, not necessarily that I have the sentiment, but, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that do. You know, one of the things that I've heard is like, okay, well, the laissez-faire attitude of, you know, just kind of let the internet do what it wants makes the copyright or the product less appealing to a business. Like if Disney were to come to you and say, I want Siren Head, and you're like, yeah, well, you know, I let the internet kind of do its thing, that would not really fucking fly at Disney, especially, you know, because they're stronger copyright protection. So has your kind of more laissez-faire attitude ever come up? Has it ever been like you need to be harder on this and you're like, I don't really want to, like, you know, has that ever kind of been in the conversation?
No, actually. I mean, I think that, like I said, I don't think there would even be that interest from, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the chicken or the egg a little bit, where certain companies will shy away from taking on a property if the fandom is super out of control. But at the same time, maybe they wouldn't be interested in that property at all if that interest wasn't there in the first place.
Exactly.
But no, personally, that hasn't come up. I'm trying very hard not to reveal anything, but it hasn't come up. And, you know, when you get a larger company involved in any capacity, they might have more of a team on hand to look into anything like that, whereas I'm one person and I would literally have to spend hunt down and, you know, give cease and desist for stuff. If I really wanted to tackle that kind of thing properly, then it would be like a full-time job. But
that's actually kind of leads into my next
question, yeah,
which is that, you know, there's like a very real possibility that, you know, this blows up in the same way that Slender Man does. You know, you have Siren Head, The Arrival, you have Siren Man, the nine pages, just to
get a little bit more.
And, you know, basically, ever since Sony acquired the rights to Slender Man to make the film, they've been, like, significantly more litigious about, like, fan projects.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, there is, I imagine, the guy that made Slender Man, or the guy that currently owns Slender Man.
Yeah.
Kind of has walked away from it. The guy that made it definitely has, but the guy that owns it is kind of like, kind of lets other people handle it. How do you feel now? Young, excitable, still energetic about life, work? I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming you're under 50.
I'm under 50. Yeah. I'm 35.
So 15 years from now.
Yeah.
You're still doing Siren Head. You're still making Siren Head products. You're chasing down those copyrights. You have become the Siren Head guy.
I don't want to be the Siren Head guy.
You do?
No, I don't. I don't.
I'm saying, like, do you think you'd be as excited about it if you had to deal with all those factors?
Well, the thing is that when I made Siren Head, that was a one-off character in a long series of photos that I was doing, like I said, three or four a day. And I was trying to do different characters, you know, and then, you know, it didn't catch on for about another 2 years after that. And at that point, I'd already made a bunch of characters that I liked as much as Siren Head or more, that I thought were more interesting and more fertile for stories. And I've just kept making them. And there's a couple newer ones that I am planning stories with that I think are much more interesting than Siren Head. I would hate to be the guy who just made Siren Head and then just like made Siren Head. And that was it forever. And that was the only thing I did. And because that was the one that happened to blow up, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
We saw at some all.
Of your other work in the demo disc 2 in the ARD secret game. Al Modus did. Yeah.
Yes, that was so cool. The man with the upside down faces in that one. That's the one.
Yeah. That was a really cool game, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, that was 100% them. I was just like, this looks great. you know, you can use my character. This is cool. But that was 100% them doing literally everything, writing it, coding it. I think the only thing that I contributed besides just saying, like, I would love this is I gave them the image of the upside down face man to use on the model that, like, jumps out at you at the end there. But they're both really great. Modus Interactive made the very first photos in, like, 2018. That was what Markiplier and, like, all those other big, like, gameplay YouTube people played that really made the character blow up. So, yeah, they're both awesome.
Yeah, Modus is great, and I talk to Corpse Pile almost every day.
Yeah.
You know, so is that your ideal for, like, what you want to do as a creative is to do kind of the art and let someone else do the programming, design, et cetera, the game creation part, and you're just, you know, hey, here's the art, do what you want with it? Or do you want to be more like, you know, a Hideo Kojima type, being like, here's the story, here's everything?
Well, definitely the second one. I mean, I'd love to. I feel like the kind of the brief story chunks that I do on Twitter and, like, the, you know, the photos and stuff are all kind of like little story seeds. And I really do want to move beyond that and keep doing those, but tackle, like, larger narratives, you know, actually do, like, you know, stuff that's longer, stuff that has characters and ongoing arcs, like things that are a little bit more ambitious. And I am writing something, well, I'm on the second draft of something I have written that I think could be really, really cool when it gets announced. I don't know when it'll be announced. But I definitely don't want to just, you know, do the characters for other people to take. I want to move beyond that and definitely do stuff that's more ambitious. I have a pretty good idea of what I would do for a Siren Head book or story or comic, something with a longer narrative that I won't speak about right now, but I would love to do it. I really want to do something that's longer form fiction for the character, the Sisters of the Ever Sharpening Blade, like the weird gothic. There's this character I made that's like this gothic entity with like a veil over its head and a head made of knives and shit. I have a whole story planned out for them. So definitely 2022, I really want, and also collaborate with people in a more involved way where I'm just less like hands off and more hands on, I guess.
But at the same time, there is always the creative back and forth of different mediums, like the creative give and take of different mediums. Like, you know, when you draw a picture and you're like, oh, their head is knives and they look really cool, you don't actually have to have like the burden of like, how does this thing move around? How does, like, Siren Head specifically is like, you know, it's a really cool creature, but it's like, what is its motives? And as soon as you try to get into those weeds, it loses some mystique. You know,
you have to be very careful. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And when you're doing like an SCP or a creepypasta or a drawing, you can be more vague on those details. But oftentimes with a game, people are looking, or a book or movie or something, people are looking for a story, a deeper dive. That's why, like, kind of all the Slenderman stuff has, other than the Marble Hornets YouTube series, but like the Slenderman movies and stuff haven't done super well, because Slenderman is the unknown, and as soon as you put a character face to that and try to put up like wrap a teen love story plot in there, it's like, the fuck am I watching? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really, really tricky, and I feel like anything, you know, where you're doing a character like Slenderman or whatever, I feel like you have to have a really engaging story, and then I feel like you don't want even the more of a focus on the character, the less scary it's going to be because you're explaining more. But at the same time, you have to have the character still be involved in some way. So it's more about like having a story that stands on its own two feet, that's influenced by that character without having to like really explain everything away, I guess. It's really tricky, especially with a lot of my monsters. You know, they're specifically, you know, I keep to the Twitter character limit specifically so I'm limited from saying too much. I want to just imply more than anything. And when you have
that's
a long
interesting way to look at it, that's really, yeah, that's really clever.
I want to imply, and you know, the image and the brief blurb underneath are just supposed to play off each other and let you do the work and come up with a better story that will be more interesting than anything. If I just like done a whole Twitter thread of like 20 different posts and did a whole story, it's not going to be anywhere as creepy as if I just do one that's 120 characters and then leave it to you, because you'll fill in what's scary to you.
There's a reason why Lovecraft's most successful stories are short stories. I mean, he did do novels, but like they weren't very well received. And his short stories are usually the ones that like people love, because it's usually just some guy being like, I've been having these nightmares. Shit's crazy, bro. There's this thing called Cthulhu. And like, you don't really need to have a plot to that. You know, like at the end, the guy loses his mind. You know, like that's yeah. No, like nothing to resolve. It's just like laying the scenery, you know?
Yep. Yeah. All his best stories like play with implication. Like my favorite Lovecraft story is Color Out of Space. And that one, the monster is just like an invisible, intangible element that's warping the environment around them. And yeah. It's not even something that anyone can actually see. It's just about knowing what to show and when not. I can't tell you how many times I've done like a photo drawing or whatever and drawn like a full monster in there and then just gone over and like covered three quarters of it in shadow because it's way better. It's creepier to see less. Yeah. It's important, I think. And like, yeah, that's something you're going to run into. You're going to butt heads with as soon as you do something that's longer and more involved and has characters that have arcs and depth and interactions with other characters and stuff. So, it's tricky, but I definitely do want to do bigger projects, longer form projects.
I mean, I think that anything that you do with your art style will be like inherently compelling because of the visuals of it. And it's really just a question of how that all fits with the other elements. That's why I'm really curious to see how the Ghosts game turns out because it's such a weird idea.
I'm really excited about it. I know the plot and everything, and it's a really cool idea, and the way it's going to play out is great. And I want to see the monster in its full Jim Henson glory doing its thing because they really like translated the design I did in a really interesting way, and it's just, I'm really excited about it. I can't wait to play it myself.
Well, Trevor, when we had Jed on here, we tried to get him to like give us spoilers. But you should give us spoilers so we can go and impress him.
I think Jed would yell at me, and I'd rather that not happen.
Can you send us a photo of the monster? Because that would be, he'd love
yeah,
that.
Yeah, could you give us his address, actually? Jans and I have to go visit him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that he keeps the long lady in his bedroom, like this 12-foot-tall so puppet crazy. Above his bed.
Yeah.
He actually did say that. That's not a joke.
I gotta bug him for a photo of it, because all I've seen is the photo that he posted publicly of, like, the big box it arrived in, and I've seen some, you know, behind the scenes Jim Henson photos of like, here's the big long wig it's going to wear, and here's the thing that's going to support on the actor's shoulders to make it even taller and stuff. But I haven't seen it in play yet, but it's going to be cool.
Before, just real quick, we are launching a game next week, so I have to go pretty quick to go do that. But Trevor, it was awesome talking to you. I'm going to let the rest of the team kind of do the rest of the pod. I do apologize that I have to bounce a little bit early.
Of course.
You know how it is. You're launching a product, and you do the work to launch said product. But
is that going to be on the DreadXP Twitter? Where can I see this product? I want to see it.
Sucker for Love. It's coming out next week.
Okay, cool. Oh, yeah, I've heard about this. Okay, cool. I'll look that up.
It's a Cthulhu dating simulator. So
right.
We're ready to do a Trevor collective dating simulator. Just let me know. And we'll.
You know, I thought about that a lot, actually. I kind of do want to do that.
Let's do it.
It's happening.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of leeway in signing deals, and I'll just say that this is now signed, so you can go ahead and
read
about it.
Yeah.
But anyways, Trevor, great talking to you.
You think Ted is kidding, but he's not.
Okay.
I would love to talk to you more soon, and I will see you all later.
All right, talk to you later.
So, since we are coming up on the end of our hour, Trevor, where can the people find you on the internet at large?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, like, more than is good or normal or healthy. And that's Slimy Swamp Ghost, all one word, on Twitter. And then I'm also on Instagram under my actual name, because I didn't know what I was doing when I set up my Instagram in, like, 2002 or whatever. It's Trevor Henderson, all one word, all lowercase. And other than that, that's kind of just where I am. I guess that's just it. That'd be the place to talk to me. And I have my trevorhenderson.com. I purchased my actual name on domain, so that's where my portfolio is. All my stuff, yeah.
That's why I couldn't get it. Someone already bought it. Okay.
Yeah. No, I had to buy it from somebody else because I waited so long and it was like so much money, but I really wanted it, so it's worth it.
Abby, where can people find you on the internet at large?
I am on Twitter at ScrunchOG, and I'm also on Instagram at scruncho.speakeasy.
And as always, you can find me haunting the DreadXP Twitter account at DreadXP underscore.
At the grave.
Because, yeah.
At the grave.
Specifically at the grave. You can also find my personal Twitter at Horror Played, where I mostly just post things about Silent Hill nerds.
Sick.
Yeah. And you can follow DreadXP on Instagram at DreadXP Games, TikTok at DreadXP Games, Facebook if you're Polish, because the only people that check the DreadXP Facebook are the Polish. God bless them for keeping the dream alive. That one Polish person who likes every post, this is for you, one Polish person. We love you, singular Polish person who likes everything I post on Facebook. All right, Trevor Henderson, play us out.
Thank you.
What a solid effort.